All right, we're good to go.
Awesome.
All right, so let's start with your year of graduation, including if you finished up classes spring, summer, fall, and your major or majors.
So I was set to graduate in 2015. I had to take an extra semester. I believe it was around like my, I think it was because of my sophomore year. So I ended up actually walking in 2016. And my major was professional music. My concentrates were, I believe I did songwriting and music business.
Cool. When you say you walked in 2016, like, are you saying you took coursework up through spring of 2016? Or did you finish that summer of 15?
And then... So I finished, how did I think I finished like towards, if I remember correctly, wrapped up 2015, and I had to wait a whole like semester to walk. So I wrapped up and had like however many months before I had to ship back up to Boston and walk at my commencement.
Totally get it. Yep. Cool. And, oh, what was your principal instrument?
Guitar.
Nice. You're my first guitar principal. Kidding.
Yes. Oh, yes. You had me for a second. You had me for a very real second. I'm like, oh, man.
So, all right. So we will get to your history later. But for now, tell us about your current job. Where do you work? What do you do?
So my current job, I'm a marketing manager for an industrial company called Plastic Assembly Systems. We're located in Bethany, Connecticut, which is a small town in New Haven County. So pretty much where Yale is, 25 minutes in, pick a direction, doesn't matter. So I handle all of our social media presence. I handle our Google Analytics. I help design the user experience for our website. I pretty much wear every single hat you possibly can in the marketing space. And it's actually just me. I don't have a team. It's a very small workplace of about between 15 to 20 people.
And you're the only marketing person of this.
I'm the only guy, the only guy. And I, my history, my history with the company is, my dad runs the machine shop side. Just to kind of give a heads up on what we do.
I was going to say, we'll get to your history later, but definitely tell us, what does the company do?
So the company makes industrial equipment that puts plastics together. So you could think of your TVs are two separate pieces of plastic that need to be heated up so that they weld. We've made machines for Tesla motors. We've made machines for a lot of medical device industry stuff. Pretty much anything that requires two separate pieces of plastic to be put together, we offer equipment for every application that handles that.
Okay, so you're not the ones welding the plastic together. You're the ones who make the machine tools that then do that.
Correct. Yep. We do offer contract assembly. So, people will send us their parts and we'll design and make the tooling in-house. And sometimes it's like an assembly line there, and we have another building with a warehouse with some lab machines that we can run stuff on. But we pretty much cover all the bases. It's a massive market. And we absolutely meet every possible need and application style for the sector of plastics.
Can I ask, does your company have competition?
Yes, there's a few companies that are actually quite larger than us. And I mean, we work on an international scale. We've been a company since 1999. And obviously I haven't been there since 1999. But we, I always look at it as kind of a feat, because I see the day today and how small the, just employee sizes and all that stuff. And what we're able to do is actually quite remarkable. When you compare us to our competitors, there's a company, Emerson, a company Duquesne, who just work on a massive scale with hundreds, if not thousands, of employees. So the fact that we're able to do what we do is actually very impressive to me.
I mean, 15 to 20 people and you're the only marketer. Are a lot of the others like actual, like, machine tool operators or mechanical engineers or?
Yeah, so we have two engineers who do all the design on AutoCAD and some other software. There's 4 or 5 people in the machine shop, 2 owners, and then a team of about, I would say, 4 to 6 on the assembly and electrical side. And I mean, I think because it's a business to business business, everything is built to order. So we're not really, that's not to say that we aren't under crunch from time to time, but everything is really a big project. We do offer some smaller equipment, like some handheld stuff and stuff for benchtop that aren't these massive hulking machines. But for the most part, you know, out on our assembly floor right now, if I counted, I think there were 5 decently sized machines that were being worked on at any given time. So we're not operating like we're going to produce 50 of these things in a month. You know, that's not really how we operate because it's all very custom built to order stuff.
Sure, sure. That makes sense. And you said you're the marketing department. What sort of marketing are you doing here? Like, how are you being seen by, as you said, your competitors are larger?
I would say a lot of it. So I work with a third party company based out of Massachusetts called Neptune Web. And they offer their services of software to curate e-blasts. So I could shoot off my emails to thousands and thousands of people and feel like a star. So that's fun. And also, you know, I document the equipment with photo and video so I can integrate that into our site. I've done a pretty decent job at giving the company a bit more identity, just visually and aesthetically with, images and use of color and just kind of making it a more identifiable business in the sector of I guess manufacturing. Mm-hmm. On top of that, with that third party company I was speaking of, we're constantly going through comparing our keyword placement on Google and SEO stuff to our competitors all the time. I'm having pretty much like monthly meetings with Google, and it's more like so much of this space is really search engine optimization based. And you know, some of these companies have insane budgets. So, I'm actually kind of like in a sandbox, like, okay, well, we have about 45% less of the budget that these companies have. So what can I do with these limitations to ensure the results we're getting are equal, if not, you know, comparative in terms of, you know, despite having less money, it actually costs us less to run our stuff than it does them. So
do you do in-person marketing as well? I'm thinking, like, are there trade shows and that sort of thing?
You know what? That we used to do a lot of those. There was one that's really big in Chicago. The name of it is escaping me. I actually never got to go to them. Once COVID happened, the company kind of took a step back from that, and we're realizing we're actually spending more to go to these things than we're actually kind of making going to them, because it's a very oversaturated and loud environment. I mean, it's like you're lucky to get someone's attention for 2.5 minutes. Okay. So it's like, you know, in musician speak, it's like NAMM. It's just it's the most stimulating place in the world if that's your world. So we kind of took a step back from that and just put all our eggs into, you know, promoting online. And, you know, I'm really the only person in the company that, you know, has at least when I started, I had a rough understanding. And I've learned so much and have just kind of like added a bunch of bows to the quiver, and you know, whatever I do down the line in my life, I'm really fortunate that I got to have this experience kind of like from a, okay, Brendan, you're going to do marketing management 101 for X amount of years, and you're going to get really good at it. But, you know, when you're 35 or 40, if you want to, you know, make a move that's not lateral, I feel I've just gained so much knowledge because of this job and some of the other stuff I did after graduating.
Sure, sure. By the way, what's your official job title? You may have said it before.
It's a marketing manager.
Marketing manager, that's great. And, let's see, assume it's a salaried position?
Yep.
Yep. And, let's be honest here, about how many hours a week do you work?
I'm in at 8 and I'm out at 4:30 with an hour lunch and 2 15-minute breaks. So let's say 40.
Okay, great. So, because sometimes 40 is a real 40, and sometimes 40 is like a 60, but we call it 40, so we don't pay.
Yes, yes. Thankfully, no. I can rest easy that I don't have to do that. But yeah, pretty simple stuff. You know, I would maybe like the extra hour in the morning. You know, a 9 to 5 sounds pretty attractive, but I'll take my 8 to 4:30.
Okay, and. Speaking of the 8 to 4:30, could you sort of take us through kind of hour by hour what a typical day at work is going to be like? Like, what do you do?
Oh, absolutely. So I'll typically get in and I'll just start with like a Monday, for example. I handle the phones. I handle the mail. So I'll check the voicemails, make sure there's no customers that called. I'll bring in the mail from the mailbox. I'll get situated, make sure all the doors are unlocked. I make coffee in the morning for everybody. That's very important. That's absolutely actually the paramount thing to my morning. If I don't do that, I feel like I did something wrong. And then once I get situated at my desk, so at this point, it's probably like 8:30 or so. I'll put on my Spotify playlist and kind of just get into the zone and take a few sips of the coffee that I labored over. And just kind of go through my lists that I keep of, you know, deadlines I have for things. And it's, you know, my notes are always very haphazard, but, I'll find typically I have meetings in the morning around like 10 or 11. So, a lot of that is just reviewing SEO stuff. I might make a social media post for the day. I try to do the e-blasts maybe like twice a month. And, you know, I like to design custom images for that. So, you know, it's a day that's really filled with, I'm not going to go as far as to say I'm flying by the seat of my pants, but, you know, there's this level of autonomy I have at that job. Mm-hmm. Where I'm very much trusted in what I do. And you know, I've had my boss say it to me before. He goes, "Do you ever wonder why I don't bother you a lot?" And I just go, "No, I haven't. Please indulge me." And he's just like, "Because I know you're doing your job and you're good at what you do, and I see the results every day. So I'm not really hounded ever." For it not being the most creative thing in my life, it is still creative. So from the Photoshop stuff and making videos in Final Cut Pro, like I kind of get to analyze the forecast of like, okay, maybe I finished this big project. What can I do to occupy, you know, my time until the next big project that gets put on my plate? So my day to day is pretty much, you know, I thankfully I get to kind of attack what is kind of inspiring me and seems exciting. Outside of, you know, meeting obligations and lunch and things like that. It's really just from that time of when I get there to when I leave, I'm making my work. I'm making very educated decisions on social media content, Google stuff, YouTube stuff, website stuff. It's really kind of like what needs to be done this week. And that's kind of how I operate.
So I feel like you may have at least partially answered this question already, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Yep.
And if there's maybe something that you want to add, cool. Which is, one of the criteria I have to hit to do these interviews is that you enjoy what you do. So tell us about what it is about being this, you know, marketing manager. You can take it from a couple angles, being a marketing manager, being the one marketing person at a company, working in the industrial space. But what is it that about your job that you enjoy?
I think the thing I like most, I guess this is kind of a selfish answer, and it's very anecdotal. I can't say everyone's situation is like mine, but I do get to see my dad every day. And I'm not trying to get all personal and sappy on you, but my parents separated when I was younger, and you know, I didn't get to see my dad every day. So, you know, I get to walk in and he's in the shop and he has his coffee and he's hanging out and I get to see him. Beyond that, in terms of, you know, more relatable stuff, there's a freedom to the job that I really enjoy. And again, this is kind of outside of what I actually do. I will get to what I like to do. But there's a freedom in scheduling. If I need to go to a doctor's appointment, it's no questions asked. If I need to go to therapy, it's no questions asked.
It's flexible.
Yeah, it's very flexible. I mean, they've been accommodating for when I've had to go on tour. It's just you can only be so lucky to have that when you need it. But in terms of, you know, my tasks that bring me joy, I really like getting to give identity to something that isn't mine. And I guess what I mean by that is this is a company that has existed for a long time, and they're kind of in the old school. So with me coming in with, you know, growing up, you know, not having a lot of money, you know, needing to, in quotes, not pirate Photoshop, in order to make like band flyers and things like that, like all these technical skills that I was attaining as a kid, just being like learning how to record myself, learning how to video, learning how to do this. All of that has transcended into my professional career. So getting to do something that's so far removed from music but still requires that expertise and things that I like to do, at the very least checks off the necessary boxes for me to not wake up in immense anguish at what I have to do for the next 9 hours. Right. I think the freedom, the creativity, and you know, I always feel like I'm getting to put my stamp on something. And that's something I take great pride in.
That's fantastic. Thank you. All right. So we're going to take it back now to 2015.
Awesome.
So if you feel this story has a logical earlier starting point, we can take it back earlier.
Okay.
But otherwise, let's put it, you know, it's the fall of 2015, you're wrapping up Berkeley. I mean, I'm guessing you're not think marketing manager at some small manufacturing company. Like, hey, man, I could be wrong. But so, like, put us in your headspace as things were wrapping up at Berkeley. And then we'll take it one step at a time from there to where you are now, both in terms of what you were doing for work, but also in terms of where you were at mentally in terms of your career.
Okay, awesome. We might have to go back a little bit.
Okay.
I do remember, I don't want to say I was excited to graduate. And when I say that, I mean, I don't want to frame it like I was itching to get out of my dorm and go home. That's not what it was, but my time at Berkeley was both some of the most confusing times as well as some of the most rewarding. And that roller coaster was very, very intense for me. There was a lot of self-discovery in those 4.5 years, personally for me. And it impacted my studies sometimes. It impacted my view of myself. So I think by the time I got to my last semester, and I had very few classes left to take, and they were all very simple, and like I was having fun. I was not that I didn't have fun before, but it was like, this is it. This is it. Just show up. You're going to be fine. You're going to do great. I think I was tired, and I was aching to do the next thing in my life. I didn't know what that looked like. I just knew when I get out of here, hopefully I can get a job related to music in the music industry. Maybe I have some friends I can talk to.
So the next thing, you were still thinking music.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing was, I was definitely thinking music, but I don't think I knew what it looked like.
Okay.
I think I was so willing to bite at anything that was music. I would have cataloged CDs, you know, like I just wanted to be around what I love to do. And, you know, there was a bit of a, we can obviously get to it, but there's a bit of a reckoning where you're like, oh, wait a minute. it's still, this is life and things happen all the time. And you have to be prepared for anything that it throws at you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that sort of is your graduating. So what happens next?
So I graduated and I came home.
Which is Connecticut?
Connecticut, yep. I'm in this town, Seymour. It's a very small town. New Haven County as well. And I remember maybe a week or two went by. And I was in the basement at my mom's house, and I was playing Metal Gear Solid, and I just kind of sat there, and I had this moment with the PlayStation controller in my hand where I just went, okay, it's been 2 weeks. I should probably figure all of this out. And feeling like I was under the gun to like have it all figured out so immediately. It wasn't that I felt like holier than thou, like I'm not going to go work at a department store. I'm not going to go do this. I felt so kind of exhausted after all that schooling that I was like, just let me dive deeply into the thing I want to do. Someone has to see the merit in me and throw me a bone to do this. I would love that. Mm-hmm. But again, that's not necessarily what happened. So I started kind of looking around. I applied to a guitar store. I didn't get that job. I applied to manage a supermarket. I didn't get that job. And then my current boss reached out to me and was like, hey, you want to come back? And I know you worked here in high school, but do you want to come back and do something different? So I went back and I was
like, let me guess. I'm guessing, and I could be wrong, but I'm guessing, since you had mentioned your father worked there, that your father probably had a conversation with his boss, like, hey, my son just graduated. He's, you know, pretty good.
There very well might have been something like that. I mean, from my boss, Paul, and my father have been friends for a very, very long time.
And you said you worked there in high school, too.
Yeah. I was running machines and sweeping floors.
Okay.
So I was willing to do anything that wasn't sweeping floors and running machines. That was kind of my thing. But yeah, so he reached out and he said, you know, there's only so much to be done in this space of like video and photo stuff. But if you want to do some shipping and receiving as well, you can do that. So I got I'm like, okay, I got a job. So I did that for 3 or 4 months. And I remember I was running a machine. Like when I had downtime, I was like, hey, could I just come out and like run the lathe? That sounds fun. Like I just needed to do something different. And I was having a particularly tough week, and I was sitting there watching the lathe run. And I'm just like sitting in my head going, what am I doing? What am I doing? So it's kind of a reoccurring theme.
By the way, this is like 2016, right? In other words, you went home and pretty quickly you start working here, but as you say, just doing kind of mechanical stuff.
Yeah, and I think too, when I got my first notice of my student loans needing to be paid, I got very scared. I felt this, like, I was like, okay, I gotta get down and I gotta get ready to sprint. I gotta take care of this. But I was sitting there and I was running the machine and I was not crazy about what I was doing. And I went home and I went on all the job board sites and I found this music school that was opening up in Connecticut. That's a chain called Bach to Rock. And I applied to that and I went, got an interview. And you know, I was part of the staff that opened that school. It was still technically being built when I got the job. They found out all the things I could do with Photoshop, video editing, online marketing. So I quickly slid into this role that was originally supposed to be part-time and it became full-time. Doing their marketing as well as teaching. Cool. I was teaching a lot there, running camps there. This music school Bach to Rock.
Yeah. When is 2017 or?
I think this is maybe like early fall of 2016.
Okay. And you said you just applied and got this job.
Yep. I applied. I got the job. And actually, one of my peers at Berkeley, this phenomenal guitar player, Morgan Lutzi, he is a Connecticut native as well. And when I showed up the first day, I saw him and I got so excited. So shout out to Morgan Lutzi, amazing guy. I believe he worked in the registrar for a minute. So if you know that name, wonderful man. So I started there. And then, like I was saying, once that kind of filled up my week, because my other job at the machine shop was very open. They're like, okay, like you got to leave at noon and go to this other job. You can go do that. And once Bach to Rock became my 9 to 5, I said, I'm going to go do this thing full time. And I did that for 4 years until May of 2020.
Oh, that sounds like the pandemic.
Oh yeah.
So
luckily it wasn't a case of being laid off or anything like that. I had my current job offer presented to me and I was really burnt out. I went from doing the marketing at the school, teaching, to also becoming the director of that school. And that commute for me was sometimes an hour. So it just kind of like.
So director, was this like a chain, Dr. Rock, or just this?
Yeah. So I was doing a lot and it was not easy. And I definitely wasn't making what I should have for the amount of work I was putting in. And it was just sucking the fun out of being there. Once this opportunity came and I'm like, wow, a 15-minute commute sounds really nice. And it's a little bit more money.
Can I just ask, how did this come your way? Had you applied? Had you had a conversation? Did this just get dropped into your lap? Do you think you had a conversation with your father? Like, this job is sucking. And then he had a talk with his father, friend.
You know what? I woke up. I taught some guitar lessons over Zoom in the morning. And I had an email from my boss, Paul, just saying, hey, one of our employees is leaving to go do something else. And we're kind of changing what this position does. And I think you'd be really good at it. Would you like to do it?
Okay. So yeah, you'd worked there at other positions and they knew who you were, obviously.
Yeah. But to what you said, I would not be surprised if my wonderful father was like, you have to save my son. you have to, please, please. He's going crazy. You have to save him. The thing is, they've always known my talents, which I look at as like just everyday things that I do. But to people who, don't know that stuff, it can seem like this unattainable skill set of how does he know how to record? How does he know how to do video? Like I'm lucky enough to be average at one thing. Brendan gets to be average at 15 things and he still figures it out, So they've just always been really appreciative of what I do. And it's with that small employee base that I was talking about. It's this kind of like community aspect of, I feel close to everybody there. And I like that. I like that. The one time I went and I toured this place where I might've been able to get a job, and it was too big. Everybody seemed anonymous and not interconnected in a human way.
Sure.
And that was kind of like, not distressing, but more like it was unsettling. I'm like, I feel like I'm in Office Space, and I love the movie. It makes me laugh, but I don't see my personality and myself in this. I think smaller groups, working collaboratively is a lot better for me.
Right. So it sounds like they reached out to you, right? You didn't apply, but they obviously knew your situation. They reached out to you. They talked about the position, and you said 15-minute commute, small company, I'm there.
Yeah. Yep. And I mean, I've applied. I mean, Kevin, I've probably, since graduating from Berkeley, I don't even want to guess how many job applications I've sent out. I'm gonna give myself a nice round number of, let's just say 1,000 to sound incredible. Let's just say I've sent 1,000 over 5 years, I guess.
So had you sent other applications off in like 2019, 2020? They just hadn't hit.
Yeah. I was applying to a lot of stuff in Manhattan. Not only in music, some stuff in film, some stuff in TV. I really like my ideal space is, I would love to work for somewhere that I'm already kind of acquainted with. So whether that be products I personally use, a place that I guess shares the same beliefs as I do, just like already feeling like, let's say I were to get a call tomorrow from Fender Guitars, I would be over the moon. I would lose my mind. I'd be like, this thing that's given me so much, I get to somehow elevate that to another level. So I guess ideally, like long-term, if we're looking at like the 20-year plan, I would love to just find myself seated somewhere that has made a tremendous impact on my life as a consumer, you know?
Okay, cool. But certainly it sounds like you got the call from, or the email from the Plastic Assembly Systems, and you said, you know, everyone knew each other, your dad's there, and it's sort of good size, good that you said good enough. Were you basically hired into your current position then?
Yeah. Yep. I got the offer letter with the exact position name. And that was it. And I just kind of showed up. I gave my 2 weeks to the music school. And took that time to kind of recuperate, do things for myself. And then I went right in and just figured it out. And they're like, we'd like to do these things. Could you figure it out? Yes, I can. Absolutely. Just didn't say no to anything. And it was just like, I'm one guy. And that's kind of in a way, that's a good thing to have on your side. Not even because, obviously you're like, man, I'd love to share this workload with some other people, but also, you know, you're kind of looked at as like, I'm the oracle of marketing for Plastic Assembly Systems. Nobody else wants to do this. It bothers them. It confuses them, but not me. So
what is worth the sword who teaches economics at Berkeley? I'm right there with you.
Yes, absolutely. I'm happy you understand.
Yeah. All right. That's great. And here you are.
Yes.
So
alive and well.
Awesome. Well, let's move on to the third part of the interview of three. So let me preface the next question with, there is no right or wrong answer.
Okay.
So these days, let's define these days as 2024. What, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
I'm putting out a record in 15 days.
Oh, wow.
And it's the best thing I've ever done. I'm so proud of it. It's gaining traction that I haven't gotten to experience before. And I've never been so proud of something. You know, I go for rides in the car and I throw it on. I'm like, okay, I need 45 minutes to listen to this. And I just sit and I can't believe it's mine. And it feels so special and different. So that's exciting.
Was this a one-man project, by the way, or was this like you and a band? And
so it started, I was kind of integrated into our like alternative pop punk music scene when I was in high school. And there's only a few venues in Connecticut. So, I made a band with my best friend in middle school. It took us years to get a drummer and we just played and played and played, but I was the songwriter. I was the guy. I never sang prior to that. And it was just, I found myself, really enjoying it. And I loved the craft of songwriting. Songs always kind of come first for me. So through high school, playing shows in Connecticut, meeting a bunch of musicians in my state, leaving to go to Berkeley, I wasn't able to play shows as much, but I never stopped making music. And because I was always recording and writing it, I was doing that in my dorm room. So I just never stopped. So that has always been there as kind of my Brian Wilson-esque, I'm going to retire from show business and just live in the studio because I just love recording music. So my project is Charity Bliss. That's the name. It's just me. I record all the music. I do all the art direction. I mix it. I master it. All of it is mine. And then the other thing I do is I play guitar and sing for a band called A Will Away. And I grew up with those guys in that scene playing shows, got acquainted. And they were one of the first bands in our world that broke out. You know, they went and toured the tri-state area and then it was international and then they got signed and then they were playing festivals. And they needed a guitar player back in 2021, and someone threw my name in the hat and I went in and I auditioned, and before I knew it, I've been in the band since then.
But that sounds like it's like paid gigs.
Yeah. Oh, those are paid. That's like, we'll tour maybe two or three times a year. Sometimes like the longest tour I've done with the guys was a month and a half.
All right.
But we also like, we're doing a one-off show the day my record comes out at this, there's Two Roads, the beer company is located in Connecticut and they're doing a festival with a bunch of, alternative bands. So we're headlining that. That's going to be a lot of fun. That's actually the first time we're going to have played a show since last year. So it's really, really exciting.
Well, that's fantastic. Cool. All right, I figured out which category to put you in.
Beautiful.
Semi-pro, which is where it's still a nice side job.
Absolutely, it is.
Cool. So, all right, next question I have is, right, there are many jobs out there that say bachelor's degree required, and Berkeley is a bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond the fact that it's a four-year college degree, compared to if you'd gone to, say, University of Connecticut, is there anything you feel your Berkeley experience did particularly well to prepare you for your current job?
That's a good question. I think the quantity and quality of the work I had to do at Berkeley almost made me overestimate what was going to be asked of me as a working adult. And what I mean by that is I remember just, I look back on just the amount of work I had to do and the just versatility of it all. And just feeling like I'm dropped into this pile of papers, like, how am I going to do this? And you would always figure it out. finals and midterms were always a frustrating event, but you always got through it. And obviously I'm not going to speak for everybody, but you kind of blink and it's over. So it kind of like, I think what Berkeley did was it forced me to take things really seriously. Not that I didn't before. I think in high school, I was one of those students who maybe, when am I going to use this? Oh, well, if you build a deck in your backyard, you're going to need to. And I'm like, I'm not building a deck. I got a car, you know, like I was maybe one of those. But I think it showed me what I was capable of. Mm-hmm. I think that was one of the priceless things. I wouldn't say there's a lot of overlap from my education. I think there's a lot of things that, you know, I can kind of reflect on now that actually kind of transcend work, that have actually been a lot more serving to me, just in terms of looking back on attending the school, that have just been good for my everyday, you know?
Okay, cool. We're going to flip that question around now. Mm-hmm. Because Berkeley gives that one degree, the Bachelor's in Music. You went there knowing that. And, you know, you're in a cool career and doing very well for yourself. But all that said, when you look back at your Berkeley education, is there anything where you say, you know, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this while I was at Berkeley, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete?
You know what, and this might fall on me, and it might have not been very clear to me, or maybe I didn't search this information out, but I remember kind of hitting the end of my junior year, looking at all my friends going to other schools, and, you know, they would have an internship, or this, or that, and I know some of the majors would kind of set you up, like, I think music business does that.
Yeah, they have.
And I didn't have that. And it just wasn't always really clear, like, what my resources were. And that's, again, I wouldn't put that on the school. I kind of detracted for a bit and just kind of put my head down and went to class. But I feel like, honestly, I think what you're doing, And I know I kind of said this before we hit record, but I wish there was a bit more of a realist candor to me as a student all those years ago. Just, you know, and I'm not throwing shade. I'm not going to say any names. But I remember Berkeley kind of being touted as a golden ticket a couple of times. And I know that's not the general belief by any means, but sometimes it was implied to me, almost like when it was helpful and beneficial to say that to me. It didn't make me jaded. It didn't make me, you know, when I got out of school, I wasn't like going crazy, like, oh, they told me this, they told me that. I was just kind of like, man, I wish someone told me that this might be how it happens. I never had this inclination that this would be how this goes down. So that's why with this project you're doing, like I said before, I wish I could have had someone come in and say, hey, you know, there's a chance you might not be the guitar player for the Smashing Pumpkins. and you know what, though, here are a lot of very talented, creative people in the prime of their life doing something different that still makes them happy, and they're still able to be as creative and as fundamentally proud of their work as if they were doing music. Like, I would have loved to hear that, but I just never did. You know, I had Victor Wooten come into my class and, you know, get me all amped up, like, man, music is great. And I'm like, and you ride that high for a little bit, but, you know, you're also really young. And, it's a very, it's a very difficult time of self-discovery and the rest of your life. But at the time, you don't know it's the rest of your life. You're just like, it's very crazy. I think I was so wrapped up in just being in the world of Berkeley and going from being a big fish in a small pond here to just the vast openness of everyone feels like a world-class musician. Everyone feels so good. Everyone is at the top of their game. What am I doing? You know? So I wish, you know, long story short, I said it. I would have liked some communication like this. I think it would have given me a perspective that would have maybe helped me have like a healthier relationship with my education while at school as well as afterwards.
Got it. Well, thank you. And
of course. Right.
So next question I have for you is, indeed, there are people at Berkeley who maybe aren't quite sure what's going to come next, as well as maybe people in that recent grads who, again, are kind of haven't found their path yet.
Mm-hmm.
So for either or both of those groups, what advice do you have?
I would say I want to be very intentional with how I say this. At all costs, I would say do not allow yourself to think that your education was a mistake, or that you spent too much money, or that you could have done things differently. Because music will always be there. It may come to you in different ways. It might be something you play. It might be something you listen to. But I would, you know, I went through a phase of being incredibly, you know, kind of like, should I have done this? What am I doing? Like, it's, you know, you're out in the world and it can be very, very confusing. And it's not so much about regretting. It's just like, well, I spent 4 years of my life. What am I supposed to do? But I would say just remember why you went to the school and think of the priceless things that it gave you in both friends. You know, I can speak personally. I have an incredible lifelong friend that he's my favorite drummer in the world. He was my roommate for 3 years. And I get to say that I get to have him in my life for the rest of my life. And that wouldn't have happened without that school. I never want to see anybody lose the drive and love of music because of the stressors of turning it into an education. You have to keep the faith and keep the perspective on what it's given you. You know, like I always say, like, music has given me everything and nothing at the same time. there's something really magical about it. And I'll share a little bit. I guess this is a good way to kind of close this question off.
Sure.
I remember having this thought in my senior year. And it was kind of like I'm not going to say it was a come to Jesus moment, but it was definitely like this realization of kind of where I was at, where I went, you know, this thing that I used to like nurse and nurture in my childhood bedroom for 4 to 5 hours a day, playing along to Nirvana songs and just getting lost in it. And it's like kind of ephemeral, like music really does this powerful thing. Like if you really sit there and think about it, it commands you how to feel. Like you can't from the downbeat or the upbeat, depending on who you ask. I look at it like this thing that was a hobby that brought me so much love and so much joy turned into an educational thing. And I did that for years, you know, in my room, honing my craft. Mm-hmm. There's not any people who grew up, you know, studying and practicing brain surgery in their kitchen, you know? So what I mean by that is like, I took what I felt was a self-identifying characteristic and inherently like music is in my DNA. That's what it feels like. And I turned that into, you know, now people are going to tell me what to do. And I'm going to do all of this work in this world, like it becomes a job. And, you know, it can be easy to give into, like, it's almost like seductive to become like jaded. Like you hear about these musicians who are just like, they hate fame, they hate this, they hate that. And I just look at it like, remember why you applied to that school. You almost have to reverse engineer it. Like, why did I want to go there in the first place? What is it? And hold on to that. Like, it's very different. You're going to school for your passion. That is one of the hardest things anybody can do. It can burn you out. It can scare you. It can just, you'll put your tail between your legs and run. But through riding out those hard times of like, you know, who you are, why am I doing this? Like, why is this thing that, you know, I love freaking me out so much? I just hope, obviously I can't stop that from happening for a lot of these kids, but I just know I went through that at a very important time in my life, both at the school and afterwards. And I came out the other side with such an appreciation of music itself. It kind of like broke the glass ceiling a bit, where it's brought me more joy than ever before, because I'm just very true to myself. And I think if you can do that, and obviously, you know, life throws things at you, but I have no doubt that, you know, students will figure it out. It's everybody's going through it. You know, my generation is having a bit of a tough time, but we're doing okay. The Zoomers love us, from my understanding. but yeah, I just, yeah, too long didn't read is, do not allow, you know, the fact that the dynamic of your relationship with music might be different from what it was 5-6 years ago, but it's still there. You're still you. You still love the music you love. You still play the way you play, and it's your voice, and no one can take that from you. And, you just have to really stay in touch with, what makes you the musician you are, because you're a lot more special doing what you do than copying and, you know, feeling you have to live up to some expectation or playing style that someone else sets.
Right, well, that's wonderful. And to zoom in on that question a little bit, you know, I think I mentioned you're something around my 247th interview.
Yes.
But maybe proudly, my 20th person who works in marketing. So mm-hmm. No one's listening to all 247, but if they've made it this far, they might be interested in marketing as a career.
Yep.
So for someone who's seriously thinking about marketing as a career, but they're not doing it yet, do you have any specific advice for them?
You know, this advice can kind of go for a lot of things. I would always keep your finger on the pulse of software that's being used. you know, always brush up on your Excel skills. That's important. And just kind of like have, even if you're not doing the thing, kind of have it in your peripheral, like at least be aware of, you know, the concepts and things that are popular at the time. And if you have any free time and you want to give it a shot, and do some, like, there's so many helpful courses and things to learn the most obscure things. Like, there's free programs to learn how to do 3D animation, free programs to learn a myriad of skills. So if you're interested in marketing, I would, you know, LinkedIn is a big scary world. But I would connect with, you know, maybe some of your peers. I know at least when I went to Berkeley, one of the things I was told was to make a LinkedIn account, and I made sure I listed all, you know, hundreds of courses I took to look like, man, this guy's a genius. But like, yeah, I would always be informed. It's better to be informed, mainly because the last thing you want to do is be the old guy screaming at the cloud, like, everything used to be this way. Why is it different now? Like, you have more time than you think to be informed on what you want to do and how it works. And obviously, you know, that sounds really great on paper. Once you're in the real world, there's a dynamic there. And you have to have work ethic. But at the end of the day, you know, kind of treat it like a hobby. Just educate yourself. You know, I think doing that prior will provide you with a better understanding of, is this what I want to do at all? You know, I think that's really helpful.
Sure. That great answer. So I just have one last question for you, Brendan, which is, you have the mic. Is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, let's go with it. My cat has her face in my coffee mug right now. That's not my final word. I want to scratch that from the record. You don't have to keep that. Okay. I think I'd like to say, you know, I think for a while I felt maybe I should have done something different than go to the school. I think I had some interactions with students. I felt kind of alienated because I couldn't find my place at that school for the first 2 years. Like, it was hard to find people who were into the music I was into. I kind of felt like there's the shredders, there's the jazz guys, there's the incredible piano players. Like, where is my world of people who got into the school and didn't even know how to read music? Like, am I a pariah? Why am I here? Did they make a mistake? And I went through, like, the first 2 years of school were really tough. And before imposter syndrome were, you know, buzzwords, I felt really lost. But I had this moment my first semester of my junior year where I started listening to the music that made me fall in love with music in the first place. And I got in touch with that side of me, and I began to not fawn over or compare myself to others, which is the worst thing you can do, especially at that school. And instead I owned what I could do. And when I moved into 150 Mass Avenue, I ran into a friend of mine. I actually did the guitar sessions week-long program my senior year of high school. And I met this guy, Mitchell Owens, there, who actually ended up getting into Berkeley at the same time I did. And I ran into him. This was when I was outside picking up my MacBook Pro, I think it was the first or second day I was at the school. And he told me, hey, you know, I'm rooming with this incredible guitar player. He's got perfect pitch. He's got synesthesia. He's got the presidential scholarship. You should come and meet him. And lo and behold, this guy to this day is the most unbelievable guitar player I've ever seen and heard. Just an incredibly nice guy. And we would sit down and jam together, and I would be so terrified. I was so scared. I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. This guy is phenomenal. I listened just for some perspective. I listened to this guy transcribe Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And I walked into his dorm room and he had it on and he goes, do you hear the notes in his voice? And I'm like, Mike, I don't think I can hear what you're hearing. And then he picked up his guitar and was playing to the speech, and my mind, like, the world could have caved in. Like, it was that unbelievable. So that was what I was up against. And there was this really beautiful moment one night. It must have been like 1 a.m. and we were all hanging out and everyone had a unplugged electric guitar in their hands, and we played. And when we were done, he turned to me and he said, Brendan, the same way you feel you can't do what I do, I can tell you without a doubt, I cannot do what you do. And that really affected me in a really powerful way, seeing a world-class musician that puts their hands on the fretboard and these notes feel like they don't exist. Like, I'm hearing them for the first time. Like, it's not even a letter name. It's a number with a color. Like, it's felt so out there in such a beautiful way. And for him to tell me that and show appreciation for a self-taught kid who grew up worshiping Kurt Cobain was a very, very powerful thing. And so, Mike, I would like to thank you. If you're listening to this, that really means a lot. I never got a chance to tell you that. But yeah, it's everybody has their musical voice, and you have to cherish it. And again, don't compare yourself to others. You are you. Make the music you want to make, and someone will hear it. Just keep going. I think that's my final word.
Yeah, that's great. A wonderful note to end on. So, hey, Brendan, thank you so much for making the time to have this conversation. I really enjoyed it.
No problem, Kevin. I appreciate you reaching out, and be well and have a great weekend.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.